Continue to pray for this service. That we know that I'm up here speaking, but we're all in this together, and we have an audience of one. I brought with me this morning something I want to talk to you about. I have a piece of rope, small piece of rope, black rope here. It's pretty strong. I'm not strong enough to break it by myself, but a good man like Brother Kenny or one of these other big guys, Brother Dylan, could probably pull that and break it. But I have another piece of rope too I want to show you. Red, you'll notice the red and black rope. So if I combine this with this and add another rope side by side with this one, it actually makes that stronger. And y'all know this. I mean, it's pretty common logic. You have two of them side by side, makes it a whole lot stronger. You know, it not only does it doesn't just double the strength of the power, but it more than doubles it, two plus, because the two together touch each other and they make the whole thing stronger. Let's take this one more step. I've got one more piece of cord with me. Now I've got three cords, and I've got at least three times the strength of that, what we had originally. When I add those three together, it makes them a whole lot stronger. Let's do one more thing. Now, I probably need some of the ladies' help because they can do this better than me. Any of the ladies who's ever put pigtails together for kids knows how to weave these three together, but let me weave out here and see if I can get some of this together. All of my years with Reed involved in Scouts, we had to learn to do things with ropes and how to tie them and things. And this is one of the things we learned. But we take these and, excuse me, the microphone, weave them together like that. You know what you have when you take these three and weave them together? What that's called, we had three cords previously. Weaving those together now, I have a threefold cord. Threefold cord, each cord touches the other two at all times. It not only triples the strength, but it probably takes it up four or five times because you've got the added strength. It's today what we would call synergy, yeah, is the word I'm looking for. Not only do they have the strength of each cord, but it gets stronger when you put all three together, and especially when you weave them together. Weave them together, that becomes a threefold cord. You fold it in the cords together, a threefold cord, and that's really strong. It's hard to break that one. I dare say I could take the strongest man in the room who could break one cord. You're not going to be able to break those three when you weave them together like that because it increases the strength. Not new. We have the wisest man in the world has told us about this. In the book of Ecclesiastes written by King Solomon. King Solomon, of course, was the wisest man in the history of the world. You know, he wasn't greater than Christ, but as far as the natural man goes, Solomon was the wisest man in the history of the world. The Lord said when he made him king, and Solomon prayed for wisdom that he might be a proper leader, and I would hope our leaders today would pray that same way. Solomon prayed. He didn't ask for strength. He didn't ask for long life. And he didn't ask for riches. And he didn't ask for his enemies to be put aside. He asked for wisdom so that he could properly rule over his people. And the Lord was so pleased with his prayer about, you didn't ask for riches. You didn't ask for long life. You didn't ask for victory over your enemies. But you asked for wisdom to help my people. That the Lord ended up giving him not only great wisdom, but gave him great riches and great power and a great kingdom and kept him free from all attacks of his enemies. The Lord gave him everything that he didn't ask for in addition to what he did ask for. But in the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 4, verse 12, it talks about, and if one prevail against him, if a person prevails against someone, Two shall withstand him. Two can withstand him, as we show two cords. And a threefold cord is not easily broken, not quickly broken. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. We see the threefold used throughout places in the Bible. But just demonstrated here, we know that. But Solomon, again, the wisest man in the history of the world, if there's a lot of how-to books on the market. If you want to go to the store and get a how-to do anything, they got them on everything. But how to live our life, there's not any better how-to book than this Bible. Especially when you look at the book of Proverbs, the book of Ecclesiastes, the book of Songs of Solomon. Solomon wrote all three of those, and he was the wisest man in the history of the world. You know, when you go buy a book, you want to make sure that the writer, the author of that book, knows what he's talking about. Well, this book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon wrote, the wisest man in the history of the world. If there's anybody we ought to be reading, it'd be Solomon. If we want to know how to get through life, his books, his Proverbs, and his Ecclesiastes are the greatest guideline to life we could possibly imagine. And I hope that's what we can talk to you about a little bit this morning, is his writings in the book of Ecclesiastes. When you talk about the threefold cord, we have threefold as manifest in the Bible. First of all, this threefold cord is used occasionally at wedding ceremonies. I presided over a wedding a couple of years ago, and this is one of the things the bride and the groom chose to use as a demonstration. A threefold cord, the husband and the wife, and that's the way they introduced Lord into their marriage too. The three of them open together. There's no, like we said, the threefold cord, there's no time when one cord is not always touching the other two. And that's a recipe for a great marriage, is when the husband has the wife and the Lord, and the wife has the husband and the Lord. You have all three of them touching at one time. The Lord always takes the priority, but then that's how the perfect marriage would exist, if at all times we love the Lord first and took care of our spouses, we have all three of those touching each other at the same time. We also have another good example of that in the Bible, the Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Now, there's a threefold cord that cannot be broken, not quickly broken, but cannot be broken. We have the three great virtues of the Bible, faith, hope, and charity. Again, when you have all three of those and you put those in your life, you're not easily going to be broken or taken down, no matter what happens to you in life. We also, I like the example that is used in the book of Acts, I believe it's chapter 1, 14, when all the apostles were together before they went out and preached on the day of Pentecost. It said all the apostles were there, all 11 of them at that time, were there, and they were praying, and they were all in one accord. I like the kind of the pun that's thrown in there with that. They were in one accord because they were all there, and this is the one I think that is the most important that I want to talk to us about today. A threefold cord being us in our lives, it's others that are involved in our lives, and it's the Lord. And that's what you had there on the day of Pentecost before they went out and preached. You had the apostles, not just one of them, but they were there praying in one accord. They were praying separately, but together, and they're praying to the Lord. We have it again demonstrated over in, I believe it's the fourth chapter of the book of Acts, where Peter and James had been locked up by Herod, and then they were released, locked up by the Sanhedrin, and been released. And it says they came back and met with all the church at Jerusalem, and the body together prayed in one accord. Happened again over in the 14th chapter of Acts, I believe, where Apostle Peter and Silas were locked up by King Herod. And at nighttime, the jails were opened up and they came free. And it said they had a lot to do with that, because the church at Jerusalem all got together and prayed. They all got together and prayed. They depended on each other. They were all doing it in one accord. I want to go back and look at a little bit of this in the fourth chapter of Ecclesiastes, but let's talk about what Ecclesiastes is about, first of all. Ecclesiastes, and Brother Kenny has quoted a couple of verses from Ecclesiasts. I want to spend a little time on it. But Ecclesiastes is where you have Solomon is talking about the meaning of life. We make a joke out of this. Somebody will ask me sometime, can I do anything? I spend a lot of night in hotels on my travels, and they'll always finish up and say, is there anything we can do to help you? And I'll jokingly always say, yeah, you could tell me the meaning of life. Well, you know, this is what Solomon is doing here in the book of Ecclesiastes. So if you ever wonder about what's going on with your life or what's happening in the world, this is what Solomon writes about. Now, Solomon, he had riches, more riches than anybody had ever had. He had great wisdom. He had great power. He extended the size of the kingdom. He was one of the most powerful leaders ever. Plus, then, he had, you know, what some say is every man's dream. He had 700 wives and 300 concubines. He also had at one place where the Queen of Sheba came to see him and said, "This is unbelievable." She was supposed to have been one of the most beautiful queens come up from the south. And she came to see him and she said, "This man is richer than we can imagine. He's wiser than we can imagine. He's more powerful and more logical." You know, and said, "The half has not been told about the reign of King Solomon." So, but he, when he got ready to write this book on Ecclesiastes, he's right about the meaning of life. And he starts off of it, you know, and talks about who wrote it. And in verse 2, he said, "Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. All is meaningless." He's writing about life here, and he starts off letting us know, and he uses those words throughout here, vanity and meaningless life, and he talks about under the sun. He's talking about in this world, in man's world, everything is meaningless. And I'm going, no, wait a minute. It may be meaningless to a bunch of us peons out here in the world, but you're the king. You know, you got more money than you can imagine. You got more power than you can imagine. You've got wisdom beyond belief, the wisest man in the history of the world. How can life be meaningless to you? You know, we see this sometimes. It's easy for us to be jealous or become envious of people who have lots of money and lots of power. You know, I wish I had that. I wouldn't have the troubles I do in the world. Solomon says that's not true. He's looking here and he goes through, and that's what Ecclesiastes is about. He looks at different aspects of the world and of life as he sees them in time. And he says, basically, it's all meaningless. There's no meaning. Solomon here is applying his wisdom and his view of the world, his riches, his power, his wisdom, his reigning over the kingdom. And of course, we know how wise he was because of the great rulings that are given to us back in the book of Kings, those places. But he says, it's all vain. It's all meaningless. If you're going to try to apply your own wisdom and your logic to this life, it's vain. And it's totally meaningless. And that's the conclusion he reaches. Now, I want to cover a little bit more of it in detail in a moment. But he's going through it. He examines every aspect of that he can see the world. And that's what the book of Ecclesiastes is about. He goes through and examines the life in general. Then he examines about having fun in life and making merry in life. Then he examines the government. Then he examines independently the people and the individuals. Then he gets out in the world and looks at his court system and his government system, and he looks at the way people work. And throughout his, he keeps coming in saying, it's all vain and it's all meaningless. If you're going to try to apply your wisdom, your riches, your power in this world, the end result is it's all vain and it's all meaningless. And you'll get to this and you'll see that he's applying his understanding, man's understanding, because he keeps using everything under the sun. He's not talking about God. He's talking about the meaning of life apart from God. If God's not a part of your life, but he's powerful and rich and wise, he said, it's meaningless. He gets over here, and we'll jump to the end real quick, over to Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and 13. After he's gone through all this examination of life, he gets to this conclusion. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. He said, God is the only thing that makes our life not meaningless. Riches don't matter. Power doesn't matter. Wisdom doesn't matter. It's God involved in your life is what makes it all worthwhile. And that's where he's heading when he talks about this. If you go back into the abyss, because with God, we do have meaning. Everything in this life, you know, they say, you get rich, you eat, you sleep, you die. And if from our view as a person, individual, that's true. That's absolutely true. And that's what Solomon is saying. It's vain. You're going to die, period. You can't take that money with you. You can't take that wisdom with you. It happens. But God gives us meaning because God gives us an existence after this life. God tells us this life is not the end. It's only a very small speck in our scan of life, because He gives us an eternal aspect. He says, here's where you're going to be for eternity, for 10 and 10 thousands of years. God is the only thing that gives us meaning to get through this life that we're in. That's what Solomon concludes. He said, bottom line is, fear God and keep His commandments, because that's the whole duty of man. Going out and making money, going out and getting wise, going out and being powerful, and all that wisdom is unimportant, because God is the only thing that gives us meaning in this day-to-day life. He opens up this chapter, Ecclesiastes chapter 1, and he gives us some introduction about how all life is vain. He gets over in chapter 2 and he says pleasure is vain, to go out in mirth and make pleasure. He says we can go out and party all day long. And he said, that's vanity. You end the day empty. Get over here in chapter 12 and he says, and I turned myself to behold wisdom and its madness. He says, the wisdom, there's nothing in life that helps you about wisdom. Chapter 3, he goes the same thing. Chapter 4, he gets over here in verse 16. He goes out and he looks at the judicial system, political system, the government system. Brother Kenny said, hey, you look at this and it'll depress you. It's vain what we go through in electing our politicians and our government. If we're looking for something out of life, that we're not going to get it from our government. He said, verse 16 of chapter 3, and moreover, I saw under the sun the place of judgment, that wickedness was there, and the place of righteousness, that iniquity was there. I go look at the judgment where, go look at the government. He said, you're not going to get any justice there. You're not going to get what's right. You're not certainly not going to get anything righteous. We talk about the corruptness of politicians all the time. He does the same thing with judgment. He goes and looks at his court system, and he said, there's people suffering there, and there's not any answer for them. Iniquity is there in our government system. Iniquity is there in our judicial system. That's not where you're going to get any meaning to life at all. In those two great systems that we've created to help us out in this world, everything is still vain. Doesn't give us much hope for what's going on in our government. Get over into chapter 4. Chapter 4 is where I want to spend the time with you, to get down to where he talks about the threefold cord. Chapter 4, he says, I'm going to get out of the castle, I'm going to get out of the palace, and I'm going to go out in the world, and I'm going to look at individual people and how they live and what's going on in individual people's lives. And that's what I want to talk to you about, is chapter 4 through this verse 12, where we talk about the threefold cord. Gets in here and he says, because this is where he leads us to. God is the only thing that gives meaning to our lives, not the travails and the problems and the troubles that we have in this world. He said, so I returned and considered all the oppressions that are done under the sun. He's talking about in our lifetime, under the sun. Everything that happens under the sun is timely, day to day, our daily lives. And behold, the tears of such as were oppressed, and they had no comforter. I look and people are suffering in this world. That's the same thing we are now. We're suffering in this world. If you try to make it through the day or the week without saying, I've got bills to pay, I've got worries, how am I going to pay for my kids, how am I going to take care of my family, how am I going to make my car payment, I've got them calling me, bills. Everywhere I turn, I've got problems. I've got to go to work. If I don't work and get in 40 hours, I'm not going to be able to make it, and I'd like to take the day off, and I'm tired, and I can't afford to because I've got to work and I've got to pay bills. And then you have them calling you, and everybody's bothering you, and somebody may sue you, your neighbor may get mad at you. There's oppressions all throughout the world, and that's what he's telling us. And there is no comforter in this world. Again, everything he's looking at is from the world's perspective of the man that has everything. But he's looking, he says, having everything is meaningless, but even everything that goes on in this world is meaningless. They have no comforter, and on the side of their oppressors, there is power. Every time I look and somebody's opposed to me, they're stronger than me. They're a bill collector. They're a big credit card company. They're a big government. Everybody has more power than us as individuals. And that's what Solomon says. He says, it's tough if you're an individual living in this world. In verse 2, he said, wherefore I praise the dead, which are already dead, more than the living, which are yet alive. It's better off to be dead in this world than put up with the problems of this world. If you're just looking at it from what we have in this world, if you just think you're living in this world and you die, you're better off to get it over with and be dead. Because then you don't have to put up with all the pains and the problems and the troubles that we have in this world. In verse 3 he says, "Yes, better is he than both they which hath not yet been, who hath not seen the evil work that is done under the sun." He's saying it's better even not even be born. The people that are not born are better off than those of us that are alive in this world. Number one, it's better off if you're going to live in this world to be dead. And also, it's better not even to be born than to get in this world and all the troubles that we face on a day-to-day basis. Where do we get any relief from this situation? He looks at life general. Then he goes in and he says, let's look at individuals here. First of all, he looks at the independent businessman. Man by himself. If you're by yourself in this world, but again, we're not talking about with God at all. We're talking about by yourself, making it on the merits of the world. Again, I considered all the travail and every right work. I want to go consider the man that is working for a living and doing a good job. He's working at it and he's doing well and he's working hard and he's putting in his time. He's fair and he's honest, doing what he can, doing the right work. That for this man is envied of his neighbor, this is also vanity and vexation of spirit. You get in business and you do well, they're going to resent you because you're doing well. The world is going to resent you because you're doing well. You know, you get out in the world and, you know, Brother Kenny knows this. You look in the farmer out here that's doing well. If I'm not doing well, I'm going well. He's got it easy. I'm envying him. I'm making fun of him and about he did something. He inherited his money. I'm not going to give him any credit for his work. Not only that, if he's in a store somewhere, he's going to have trouble with people not paying his bills. He's going to have all the troubles of regulation of government. Even if you're trying to do the right thing and work, you've got a lot of problems in this world independently. Verse 3, he goes in and says, now, let's look at the guy that doesn't work. Verse 3, the fool foldeth his hands together and eateth his own flesh. This is a guy that's lazy, doesn't work at all. I'm just going to fold my hands together and not do anything. I'm not going to apply myself to doing work. The other guy over there works and does great. I'm not going to do that. And he says he eateth his own flesh. It's not talking about it. He's talking about he's within himself and he's going to work and be lazy and die within himself because he doesn't do any work. He's idle and lazy. Verse 6, this is the positive thing. He says, better is a handful with quietness than both hands full with travail and vexation of spirit. Here he's talking about it's better to have one handful and be content with it. Have one hand and be content. That's hard for many of us to do. If I get a handful, I'm going to say, well, you've given me a Chevrolet, but I sure would like a Cadillac. Apostle Paul tells us this later on about whatever state we're in, we're better off when we find ourselves to be content with what we've got. He says it's better to have one handful with quietness than both hands full with travail and vexation of spirit. If you got both hands full, you're rich, you're strong, you're powerful, people are either going to try to put you down or they're going to try to steal from you. And you're going to have to guard all your riches and all your power for a long time. If you're powerful, somebody's going to try to put you down and beat you. But he said, it's better to be a handful with quietness. Have a handful and be satisfied with it in this world, the way this world is. If you're just dealing with the things of the world, not talking about God yet still, involving God, it's talking about man trying to take care of himself. Man and women, I mean, I say that generically, but man trying to take care of himself, it's better in this world, stay away from both ends, just to have a handful and be quiet about it, be content with it, than it is to try to go out and work yourself to the bone, get a lot of money because people are going to envy you, you're going to have travail or problems and vexation of spirit. Verse 7, he says, then I returned and I saw vanity under the sun. He goes in and he looks and he says, here's another man. We've looked at the man that works hard. We've looked at the man that's lazy and idle. Now we've looked at the man that is content with what he has, doesn't try to do too much one way or the other. And he's said he's a better spirit, has better spirits than the man that makes a lot. He says, but then, verse 8, there is one alone. He's talking about the independent man. I'm not going to depend on anybody else. I'm going to do this all by myself. And we've seen that, and we've all done that from time to time. I can do it better, faster, and cheaper myself than I can anybody helping me. Not only that, if I work hard, I don't want to share it with anybody. I want to keep it myself. He's fixing to talk about the greedy man here, the man who hoards stuff and doesn't share it. There is one alone, and there is not a second. This is a man, he's not married. He doesn't have any kids. He doesn't have anybody, partners working with him. He's by himself. He's one and alone. He hath neither child nor brother, yet is there no end to all his labor. He works hard to make money, and then he works hard to make more money. Then he works hard to make more money, and he hoards it all, and he doesn't give it and doesn't share it with anybody. Neither is his eye satisfied with riches. I can't get enough. Whatever, however much money I make, I got to make more. However much land I have to get the land next to me. I have to keep growing and getting bigger all the time by myself. And he said, neither is his eye satisfied with riches, neither saith he, for whom do I labor? I'm not working to help anybody else. I'm just working to get richer and richer for myself. I'm hoarding it. I'm greedy. I'm not going to share it with anybody. I'm not helping anybody. I'm not going to let anybody inherit it. I don't want to work with anybody else either. I want all the power and all the glory myself. And I don't want to share it with anybody. He said, neither saith he, to whom do I labor and bereave my soul of the good? He doesn't ask that question. Whom can I share this with? Whom do I have to leave this to? How am I going to get any good at all this money I'm making? This is also vain, yet it is sore travail. He said, this is worse. This is worse than the other people that travail, get sore, is because they make it and don't share it with anybody. Then the next four verses get down to what we're talking about today. Solomon tells us, in this world, two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor. As we showed a while ago, we have one working by himself. That cord can be broken. If you have two of them together, that more than doubles their strength. You know, if I'm going to build a house, and go out here and say, I'm going to build it myself. I want all the credit and all that. I'm going to build it. It's going to be hard, and it's going to take me a long time. I may say it's going to take me 6 months to build it. But if I go over here and get Brother Kenny and say, can you help me build this house? Will it cut it in half? No, it'll cut it more than half, because two of us can work faster than two individuals can. Two people working together can work faster. You'll actually increase the amount of time, and the synergy of it will allow you to do it better. He said, two are better than one because they have a good reward for the labor. Your reward is more than doubled when two of you work together. It's the reason, you know, I'm involved in a partnership. My partner and I are so different, it's unbelievable, but we work together well. He likes to do contracts. He likes to read real estate. He likes to read the fine print and all the stuff down there in them. I can do that, and I was trained to do that, but I hate it. I don't want to sit at the desk all day long and read that fine print. He loves it. You know what? He hates to get out and speak to people. He hates to get out and go see the clients. Well, that's what I love to do. Between the two of us together, if people give me a contract, I don't have time to do it and work on it because I'm in my car traveling to the next place. But I got a guy back home that's just sitting there at his desk waiting for me to send contracts to him. And he gets a new client, he doesn't want to go see it, he sends me out to go see it. We work together good, and that's what a partner's about. Also, husbands and wives. Remember, if you're working by yourself like the guy previous, you're like Adam back in the Garden of Eden. You're alone, and the Lord said, it's not good for man to be alone. You know, that's why he gave us marriage in this world, is so that we can work together and we can help each other. That's why men and women are different. That's why we fight, too. Because we're different. But that difference also turns out to be a great asset because we have different abilities and different capabilities and we see things differently. Us men are a little tougher and colder and quick decision makers. The ladies are much more compassionate and comforting and comforters. They make a good combination, and that's the reason the Lord put us together like that. Now, I know some of them are not alone. I mean, you know, especially when you get older, as some of us have, we lose our spouses from time to time. We'll talk about that more in a minute. How do you replace that? But he's telling us here, we need to work together as a team. We need to get together and spend time together and not alone. Verse 9, two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. They more than double their output when two people are doing the same chore, where they're taking the same task. It makes all the difference in the world. If you're in the kitchen, you got to wash all the dishes, and somebody comes in and says, let me wash and you dry. Or let me put them up. I mean, it makes all the difference. It speeds things up so much better. Not only that, you work together and you support each other. And that's what he said. Verse 10, for if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. you're traveling down the road, that's why it's always good to travel in twos. One of you has a flat tire or a blowout, you got someone in there to help you, someone there to pick you up. It's what he says. You know, roads back in those days, he gives us this example, because roads were not great roads. You had to go across mountains. A lot of rocks, you would fall, hurt yourself. You have somebody to pick you up. And I spoke on this a couple of years ago about the husbands and wives. You know, about that's one time in which nakedness is blessed between the husband and wife, because it creates intimacy. And that's talking about physical nakedness, but I also discuss the emotional, spiritual nakedness, especially the emotional nakedness. The wives, we know, get a little insecure from time to time, and that's where the husbands are supposed to step in and encourage them and cheer them up. Us men, our egos get bruised from time to time. We may do something, we may fail at something, and our egos get bruised and we get hurt, and we are emotionally naked. That's when the wife, nobody can help the man's ego faster than the wife and build it back up again. That's the reason he tells us we get together in this world. This is what Solomon is letting us know. It's better if there's two of you. Two are better than one, because they have a good reward. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him that is alone. It's hard to go through this life alone. And he's encouraged. He's not talking necessarily about just being single and not being married. This is a great example of why it's good that we do marry. That's what it's for. But I think you'll see in a minute, even those of us that are alone, or maybe that lost a spouse or something, it's good that we continue, because I think he'll show us that in just a moment. He said, but woe is him that is alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him up. Verse 11, and he said again, in other words, if two lie together, then they have heat. How can one be warm alone? We've ever gone camping, and again, this is back in my scouting days. We always sleep in tents of two for two, because the heat that's shared. You may not sleep right side by side, but you do that, you do it because you can contain the heat and you both can use the same heat and you use each other's heat. The reason when you're caught, if you're ever caught out cold, that's why you get close to each other, you hug each other. We all know that husbands and wives do this from time to time in bed. Husbands like to be close to their wives. I knew a man one time, he'd come to a meeting without his wife, stay one day and he'd be gone because he can't sleep without his wife being next to him. We know that wives invariably have cold feet, that they get warm on their husband. At least in my experience, that's what it's always been. But sleeping together keeps us warm, and that has great in-depth meaning other than just the physical aspect of it. You keep yourself warm. The two of you can keep yourself warm and comfortable if you're together. If two lie together, then they have heat, but how can one be warm alone? In verse 12, where we are, and if one prevail against him, if someone comes to take you on physically, someone's going to challenge you and physically beat you up, somebody's tried to mug you in a streetway, if you're by yourself, you're in trouble. Usually whoever does that knows how to do it, and they'll overpower you, they'll have a gun or something. But he says here, and he said, but two shall withstand him, and threefold cord is not quickly broken. Now, this is where he injects the other aspect into this, that he's getting back and he's referring to us as he does at the end. This is where God comes in. The threefold cord cannot be easily broken. No question about it. Two of you can help each other and you can protect each other, because if we're in a war, if we're in a battle, two of us can put our backs together and we don't have anybody attacking our back. We've got somebody, as we like to say, to guard your back, protect yourself. As the men in the Air Force say, somebody to cover your six. We're always looking, whatever we're looking is 12 o'clock. Behind our back, we can't see. It's 6 o'clock. You always want somebody to have your six, somebody to cover your back. You got me covered on this. I mean, you're covering my weak side, my backside. That's what he's talking about two. But he said you get a threefold cord. And he didn't just say three. He didn't say three, because then I could do that and separate this out, and down here at the bottom, you know, I have three cords that are strong, and it's better. But he said the real strength is in the threefold, when you weave them in and fold them in with each other. That's the importance that Solomon is trying to let us know about the Lord in our lives. The threefold aspect. It's us and it's others. And in a marriage, that can be your wife. but in any you include the Lord. That's what we saw with the in the book of Acts, those three examples where they got together, and it was me, and I'll put myself in Peter's place for a moment, it was me and the other apostles and the Lord. There's real meaning in this for us that helps us out in this world. You may be alone now. You may have lost a spouse or don't have a spouse. That's why we come to church. We come to church to share our burdens with each other. And we come to church so that we can share our burdens and pray for each other to the Lord. That's the threefold cord that I think is so important in our lives. We come to church to share our burdens one with the other. It's tough if you got a problem or battle going on and you don't have anybody to share it with. But coming to church is a great benefit. I know when you're a young person, and we've got a lot of young mothers and fathers in the room today that are raising kids. You know, and one of those things, you come and you think, I've got trouble with my kid, and we've all had this deal. You know, and one of the things I find out, you get to church and one of the older brethren or older sisters will go and say, well, you know, that happened to me. I can share my experiences with the younger ones, and that's the benefit of having two of you. That's the benefit of two. You can share the experiences one with the other. You know, my kid do that, and don't worry, they'll get through it. Terrible twos, they'll get through the terrible twos, then they'll get through the junior high years. And that's one of the great benefits that the older elders in the church have, is you have that benefit of experience. You can share that with the younger members. That's one of the benefits of coming to church, is you're around people who know you and love you and understand you. I mentioned the three virtues are, you know, faith, hope, and charity is that perfect love. It's more than just we think of as brotherly love. It's perfect love like God has for us. That's what we're supposed to have one for the other. We're supposed to come to church and share our burdens and comfort one another that comes with being together. You know, the Apostle Paul, Solomon also talked to us back in the book of Proverbs, because he wrote Proverbs for us. He talks about, Brother Kenny has used this from time to time, if we need help, if I need help and I don't know what to do, you know, and I'm by myself, I have a hard time because I won't see things objectively as if I do if I go get help. Proverbs 11, chapter 11, verse 14, where no counsel is, the people fall. I don't have anybody to go talk to, I may fail. See, where no counsel is, the people fall. But in the multitude of counselors, there's safety. You come to church, there's safety here. There's safety because you got people here who love you, they'll take care of you and share you, and who understand the meaning of life is more than what we go through in the day-to-day world. We come here to this building to get away from this world, to get away from the problems we have outside of here. We come here to make that a twofold cord, and we come to this building so that we make it a threefold cord. We come here because we have people who understand the Lord like we do. We understand that He's the meaning of life. He gives us the only thing in life that has any meaning, and that's that we have eternity. You know, they keep talking about us old Baptists. We're not afraid to die because we know that after we die, we're better off. We're better off because we go into eternity. We immediately are in the presence of the Lord the very second we die. We know that we've got an extended life out there that lasts a whole lot longer than this little breath of life that we have here. Our life goes well beyond what we think of as physical death. I was there this weekend. I was there with my sister and my older brother, Charles, who had surgery, and we were there talking, and my sister and I were talking, and we all have realized that we've all lived beyond the age that both our mother and father died. I'm older than my mother when she died by a number of years. I'm older than my father now by 2 months, but the age that he lived and how we're living longer. And I went, oh, I didn't realize my dad died so young. At the time, I thought he was kind of getting old and being a senior, and it was probably time for him to die. I don't feel like that anymore. I'm not ready to die, but I'm not afraid of it because I have somebody to share this world with, and that's you. And that's why we come to church. That's what the church is for, is to get away. Us being one, we have the church to help back us up and support us in this day-to-day world. That helps a lot too. But if we have the church and the church is praying with us and praying for us and we're getting together and praying all together, then we have that threefold cord that Solomon speaks of that is not easily or quickly broken. Back also in Proverbs is chapter 3 that I found very important, because what we want to trust in this life is our wisdom. I want to think I'm smart enough that I can do this on my own. I don't need anybody. And that's what Solomon was talking about. I thought I could do the whole world. He said Solomon was at the end of his life when he wrote Ecclesiastes. He'd been in this world and the Lord had given him wisdom and riches and power. Everything he needed in life, he could do everything himself. You know, we look at somebody who's rich and say, you know, what are you worried about? You got it made. You got everything you'd want in life. Solomon says, no, I don't. It's all vanity and meaningless. And that's what we want to do in this world. You know, if I can take care of myself, I don't need anybody else. But I've learned a long time ago that I can't take care of myself, because I can't beat the world by myself. And that's where I look to the Lord. The Lord, I knowing the Lord's there and I know what's in store for me, lets me not worry about the things of the world. And that's what that's what Solomon is trying to tell us. And he tells us that because as he closes it out, trust the Lord. He said that when he wrote this Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. Well, Solomon had greater understanding than any of us, and he's saying, don't trust your own understanding, trust the Lord. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. We're to make the Lord an integral part of our lives. Brother George used to use it this way. He'd call it joy, J-O-Y. Jesus first, others second, and yourself last. Those are three. That's a threefold cord right there. We bring us with the other people, share our burdens with them, help them with their burdens, share it with each other, and all of us pray together to the Lord. And we come here to worship the Lord as one, in one accord. Out in this world, we're rarely of one accord. It just doesn't happen. You know, being an attorney, I don't see many times in which both sides are ever in one accord. It just doesn't happen. But I can come here and I can have great joy that I enter this room and we're here of one accord. We're here, maybe Brother Kenny offered a wonderful prayer. He offered it for the people, not to the people. He offered it for the people to the Lord in behalf of all of us. And I hope all of us were helping to pray that this service would be blessed. That's praying of one accord, which I like. That's a threefold cord folded together. I'm here, you're here, we're all praying together. We fold the two of those together, and we ask the Lord to come down and bless us. And we know when that's the case, every time you read in the Bible, well, when they got together and they were together in one accord and praying in one accord, the Lord answered the prayers and was there with them. Let me close with this one, and that's the final part that is kind of taken trivial from time to time, and that's over in the book of Hebrews, chapter 10. All this fits in together about the threefold cord with what the advice that we get so many times over in the New Testament. While I think about it real quickly, in 1 Corinthians, our Apostle Paul talked to us about, you know, and he's quoting Jeremiah when he does it about the rich man glories in his riches. He thinks he helped get all those riches. The wise man glories in his wisdom. The powerful man glories in his power. The things that Solomon was talking about. He said, no, you don't have riches. You don't have power. You don't have any of that. You have, the Lord owns all of that. It's all due to him. If there's any glorying to be done, we need to glory in the Lord. We need to bring him and give him credit for that. Then it's not vain anymore when we know it's coming from the Lord. Over in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 23, he said, let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering, for he is faithful that promised. All our faith should not be in other men, but in the world. I know before I was ordained and I was counseling with Brother Crane quite a bit about what to do. He said, Don, this thing I can tell you for sure, don't put your faith in other men, even men close to you that are around you. He said, put your faith in the Lord. He said, men will disappoint you. Maybe not trying to, but men will always disappoint you. Putting your faith in the Lord, you will never be disappointed. He said, he is faithful and promised. Let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works. Let's consider each other. That's the second fold. Ourselves, and then first of all, put each other out there and consider them. Verse 25, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some, but exhorting one another. Not forsaking the assembly. This is the place where you put the threefold cord together. this is the place where you can come. Now, you know, sometimes we'll meet in prayer groups, and we've heard in the old days about people getting together and praying together. And that's what Solomon tells us. When we get together and we got one mission in mind, and that's to pray to the Lord that He'll bless us. When we come inside this room, we're away from the problems that Solomon talked about in this world. And we're here of one accord and we're praying. That's when the Lord blesses us and takes care of us and reveals Himself to us. We serve a wonderful Lord. And when we follow His advice and the advice of the wisest man in the world, to work as a threefold cord with ourselves, with our close friends and children of God, and with the Lord, then that's when we're truly blessed and we can get through the cares of this life. Thank you for your kind attention. My prayer is the Lord will richly bless you.